You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is The Neutral Zone. I'm James from London.
I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And the synopsis for tonight's show is, after rescuing three ancient humans from cryogenic stasis, the Enterprise is ordered to the Romulan Neutral Zone on an important mission. This is the season finale of the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original air date was the 16th of May, 1988. This episode was written by Deborah McIntyre and Mona Klee, and was directed by James Conway. Tonight's guest stars include Mark Alamo as T'Bok, Anthony James as Tei, Leon Rippey as LQ Sonny Clemens, Gracie Harrison as Claire Raymond. And Peter Mark Richmond as Ralph Offenhouse. So, what did we think about this episode? Now, this actually is a bit of a strange episode on my mind. I actually kind of enjoyed watching it more than I probably should, which has these are lines that I've used before on this show. It's not the greatest episode in the world. I think it's there are two plots here that don't quite really merge particularly well. But it has some good parts as well. Now, let me hand over to you, Lou. What did you think?
Yeah, we are back. That's pretty much the whole build-up of this episode. We'll have to get into further, but the people from the blast from the past was kind of interesting as well. Seeing the fish out of water, we see that quite often anytime people are brought to the future. Don't tell me you're from outer space. No, I'm from Maya. I'm only working outer space. So obviously people who don't have the concept of space travel are always wowed by the people who do. Or is it the other way around? Yeah, anyway, that's where I'm pretty much with that one.
Okay. Now I would suggest we head to the forums, but I'm not going to let that Star Trek 4 quote go unchecked, because that's such a great line.
Oh yeah,
it really is such a great line, and it reminds me of, I think one thing that I think we've missed on the Star Trek films lately, and it's not just the JJ films. I think it rolls back to a lot of the, even a lot of the TNG. I don't think there's as much quotable dialogue in there as we should. I mean, I'm from Iowa, and you work in outer space. That's super.
Yes, I think so too. Yep.
But I digress.
Okay, well then, yeah, for the forum, we would leave off on, we would pick up on, that is, episode 22 of Symbiosis. But here's a question for you. This is our last episode for the season. So if we leave off on Symbiosis, we still have Skin of Evil, we'll always have Paris, Conspiracy, and the Neutral Zone that will go untouched. So here's what I'm suggesting for tonight, James, and see if you agree. Skin of Evil has 8 of them right now. Forum comments. Let's see. We'll always have Paris has 2 at this point, but that was just put out within the last couple of days, so that should build a little more time. So what do you think about just doing 2 episodes now, Symbiosis and Skin of Evil, and then when we come back for season 1, we'll follow up with a nice long forum feedback for the 3. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds good, because we're going to have, it's probably worth letting the listeners know, I mean, either now or a little bit later in the show, that we're going to take a a couple of weeks off, right, between mm-hmm. this show hitting them and the first episode of season two.
Right.
So there's going to be, by this point, we would have, in our time, a couple of the podcasts that are in the queue would have hit, and then we would have amassed more feedback to effectively hopefully provide a good reset button for when we kick off things with the child next right. season.
And I can tell you right now, as we record this, it's a Saturday, August 16th. This will go out Friday, August 29th, or somewhere around there. But I tell you, I'm terrible at that. But season two, you're going to hear the child on Friday, September 26th. So, yeah, as you can tell, that's almost a month. And, you know, it's better than what they did on Star Trek when they left us hanging for 26 weeks. We just need a little bit of time off. But actually, for us, from August 16th, we're going to come back Saturday, September 13th. So it's about the same time frame, a little less than a month. But hopefully that's cool with everyone. Now, another thing I want to do, James, and I should have asked you this before we recorded, so I'll take this in, I'll take this out if I need to. But I'd like to consider doing review forum feedback a little bit different, because I have to wonder how many people actually sit through all the forum feedback. And last couple of them, we've only had one. But what about, like, I'm looking at Skin of Evil where there's eight, and it seems like there's a lot of back and forth between people. But what about if we break them up? We do a little bit of forum now, go on with the show, and then take a break of our review, and let's do a couple more forum feedback. What do you think about breaking it up?
I think that's fine. I mean, certainly today, right, we can hit Symbiosis first, and then mm-hmm. Skin of Evil later.
No, I mean, even if there's only one episode we're doing forum feedback, if there's a lot of them, instead of doing it all one at one time, kind of break it up throughout the show.
Yeah, that's fine as well.
Okay. Maybe we'll give it a try today and see how it works. If everyone likes it, we'll find out by season two when they leave us forum feedback and whether they like that or not. So not only do you like the review that we're doing for the Neutral Zone, do you like the new way we're going to do the forum feedback as well? Or do you prefer it all at once? Or do you even prefer it at all? I mean, if I get so many people saying, we can read, we don't need you to read it for us, then I'd drop the forum feedback if we needed to. Whatever the audience wants, I suppose. So, but I like forum feedback. I like giving people the spotlight. So I hate to get rid of altogether. Okay. So season 1, episode 22, Symbiosis. Is it Symbi or Symbi?
I think it depends on accent.
Okay.
I think it can be Symbiosis or Symbiosis.
Okay, season 1, episode 22, Pepperoni. You know, accent. That's my accent you didn't get, did you? Symbiosis. Karen McDuff gets 5 thumbs up for this one. Says, never thought I'd hear a South Park song on a Star Trek podcast. Not a problem. You got it. Anyway, Symbiosis. Even as a kid, I couldn't get over how this episode was essentially Kirk's son versus Khan's sidekick, both from Wrath of Khan. What I hadn't realized is that Judson Scott, Joachim, is that Joachim? Joachim?
That's Joachim.
Joachim?
Joachim.
Joachim?
Yeah, Joachim.
In The Wrath of Khan and Sobi in this episode was also Romulan Commander Rikar in the Voyager episode Message in a Bottle. So thanks, Memory Alpha, for that little fact. I have to admit, I never noticed Denise Crosby waving in the background of her last scene until the internet told me. Obviously, neither did the editing staff, unless she was actually allowed to do this, in which case it's a bit unprofessional, if you ask me. Anyway, let's address that. What do you think about that, James? Do you find that unprofessional?
I think you can argue this either way, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I think that I'm not particularly bothered that it's there, so I don't find it like offensive that someone's like, you know, broken the fourth wall, and it's something that really bothers me, and I think they should take it out. Actually, by the way, something similar. There's a scene, and a very notorious scene in Unification, where at the end, where they pan across, and you see a reflection of one of the crew, one of the production crew in a mirror. And I believe they removed that from the remastered version. So it's not something that's so bad it should be taken out. I think it's legitimate to be there. But for example, let's say that you're someone that's working on the show and you're taking care for all these meticulous details and continuity things, and it's your job to make sure this kind of stuff doesn't get into the broadcast show. I can imagine that those guys would be pretty annoyed that it's been, effectively their work's been hijacked.
Right.
So I can see it both ways.
Yeah. I have to wonder, maybe since no one ever really realized it, that maybe they just missed it as well. But here's devil's advocate. At the time, they were moving things around the cargo bay, right? So how do we know she isn't trying to get somebody else's attention? No, bring that one over here.
Maybe. Although I think it's a pretty clear wave. But she could have been waving to someone on the other side of the cargo bay.
Yeah.
So it's whatever. Well
could have. But I liked it. I liked her saying goodbye to us. And, she didn't get a real chance to say goodbye. So I kind of think that's cute. But, what are you going to do? Anyway, that's all skirting around the issue here. Drugs are bad, okay? I have no problem with Star Trek telling that moral story. I think they actually did a decent job of it in this episode. They covered the problems of addiction really well. The dealer-addict relationship problems is crystal clear, too. Did we need Yar explaining the issues for Wesley? Probably not. I'm fine with that, with the story. But to dumb it down that much was a bit patronizing to me. Picard's solution seemed a little risky to me, though. I know his hands were tied by the Prime Directive, but refusing to help to fix the ship seems like something the Breckians could work around. Yeah, I agree. They seemed to be more intelligent, no doubt had their own interplanetary ships available, and probably could afford to give the Omarians one or two of these ships to ensure their economy didn't collapse. I can just imagine them turning up a couple years later, finding the Omarians were still addicted and now using Brecken ships to receive their shipments instead. Picard saying, bollocks. What would he do then? Or, what's Boz? B-A-W-S.
Don't know.
He says, or Boz, as I tend to prefer. I don't know if he's just saying, Boz or what, but anyway, on that note, I tend to say a dog says rough, and I never liked wolf. Maybe deep down I'm an American. Or maybe because I'm Scottish, I prefer the more guttural sound. Anyway, I think I'll give this episode a 4 out of 5, probably somewhere between 3 and 4, but 3 seems a little harsh, on this episode, with the good moral and doesn't really have any major flaws in it. Dimming the view screen is a minor one, so Tasha waving goodbye and Picard's solution was difficult for him to work around anyway, so I couldn't be too harsh on him for that. So, 4 out of 5. Finally, my guess for the my guess for the two fives in season 2, The Measure of a Man and Q Who. Let me take a look over here. I didn't put him down. But,
No, you mentioned that you weren't going to tell anyone.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell anyone. I'm not. But now that I look, I'm going to look at this list again. It sure isn't Shades of Grey.
So now you've only got 1 5.
Yeah, I know of. Yeah, he got one of them. Never mind. I could see at least one, maybe two. But anyway, yeah. Keep going, buds. Let's see. Omarians. The Breckians did not have ships, am I right?
Yeah, that was my understanding. My understanding was that they really did nothing other than just grow the drug.
Right.
Otherwise, they'll be dropping off, dropping it off, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's cool. Well, thanks, Kieran, and hopefully we can get you on the show sometime.
Okay. Should I continue with Captain Proton?
Mm-hmm. Benjamin.
Which, Which, first things first, thank you, Doc, for shining a light on Kira Macduff. He is one of the strongest supporters of Trekmate and deserves to be recognized for it. So I think that's because I had a bit of a shout-out at the beginning of the episode. Mm-hmm. Now, on to the episode, or rather the idea of addiction and slavery. And by the way, what follows is actually quite good.
Yes,
we are all slaves burdened by a yoke we hate, yet simultaneously desire to bear. Whether we are slaves to drugs or money, women or power, to a pimp or a politician, it does not matter. The root cause of our slavery is fear of the unknown or fear of pain. The fear is a yoke each and every one of us bears across our backs. The key to life is to shed that yoke onto one who can bear it for us, someone capable of altruism and total sacrifice. Only then we will be truly free. I assume by that he means Kirk. Off of that soapbox and onto another. This is the only episode that I feel the Prime Directive has any merit. You cannot force your moralities, beliefs, hopes, desires onto someone who is incapable of listening. Notice I say incapable, not unwilling. And there is no better example of someone incapable than a drug addict. There is a reason the first step to admit is to admit there is a problem, because without that admission you can never be helped. And without any admission, any help you receive will push you in the wrong direction rather than in the right one. A truly difficult position for anyone who cares about you to be in. If they interfere, then you become the target of your hate, and if they don't, they get to watch your pain consume you without the benefit of being so high they don't care. There is no sadder realization one can have than realizing you are truly helpless, which is why I end with... And then he quotes, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage, the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference between them. Mm. So that's a very, very philosophical post there by Captain Proton. And thank you very much for that. And since then, we've had him on the show.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, he's given the AA pledge that is done before each AA meeting. So it's pretty poignant. Let me think here. What was I going to say? You know, as far as the drug addiction thing, I think I pointed out in the episode, Ben, I'm by no means saying I'm right, you're wrong, you're right, I'm wrong. But I'm just thinking, again, we are basing their drug addiction by human standards. And I still can't see why it's completely bizarre for anyone to realize, to think that maybe this just works for them. And maybe it's not really an addiction. It's what helps drive their society and what helps them flourish. I don't necessarily look at Felicium exactly the same as crack cocaine. It was a medicine at one time, and what's to say that they're cured now, but they won't get the plague later down the road, and then there'll be no Felicium. So maybe this is kind of like a nebulizer for asthma, albuterol. You need it whether you're having a problem right now or not, but you still need to take it. And so, I don't know. Make sense?
I think there's a lot... I think there was a lot that we covered in the episode, and I think this is one of the great things about Trek, right? It's a 25-year-old story that was, you know, that it's taking place in, you know, a bunch of a galaxy far away. that's taking place in a system on the other side of the galaxy or whatever, and it's, you know, I like the way that all these discussion points can come out of it. Mm-hmm. I actually think that's really the good thing about TNG, as we've been been rewatching, or Star Trek in general, is really how these stories can lead to discussions on these issues. Now, I don't think any one of these stories is a definitive critique or a definitive philosophy behind any of the issues that they raise, but I think they are very good jumping-off points. So I hear you, and I think it's great that these discussions we can have, when this stuff comes up.
Right. So who knows who's right, who knows who's wrong. Okay, and so the last one comes from Carnivore J. He says, I liked this episode all right. I like the podcast a ton more than the episode, though. The episode, I give it a 3 out of 5. The podcast, I give it a solid 5 out of 5. Keep up the good work, fellas. Thank you very much, Carnivore J.
Now, you didn't say that was the last one, though, did you?
Well, that's for the last one for Symbiosis.
It is not, because we have just had a post-in from Queen Cat Blue.
Are you serious? I got a refresh.
So that's Cena from 10 Forward, who's managed just to squeeze one in just in time.
Oh, my goodness, you're right!
So Cena follows on with, I enjoyed the discussion between the two of you about the morality of the show. The effect, possible non-effect of Picard's solution, and the alternative way to tell this story. James, your comments that this would have worked better, well, this would have been a better story if the drugs had been medicine instead, are thought-provoking. Lou, your comments about pizza brings to mind a debate about the lack of self-control versus an inherent tendency to be addicted to something, whether drugs, alcohol, gambling, or food. It is easy to dismiss this episode as a TNG after-school special episode, but both of you have taken the discussion past this criticism, and thank you for that. This episode gets a 2.5. The podcast gets a 5. That's really kind.
That is.
We don't necessarily... Do we need people to rate the podcast at the same time as rating the episode? Because I don't want us to do, you know, yesterday's Enterprise and say, well... You know, the episode gets a 5. The podcast,
2.5.
It's only a 2.5.
I'd be scared. Yeah, I don't know either.
On the lighter note, pre-packlets and the Klingon mail carrying the one making sure he delivers your mail, hysterically funny.
Yes.
In Mexico, cats say meow instead of meow.
Meow.
Right.
Good.
Meow.
Meow.
Dogs say quack quack instead of arf, ruff, or woof. And roof and rooster say kikiriki instead of cock-a-doodle-doo. And I am aware of that. So thank you very much, Cena, for just squeezing in time. And if you're very fast, you might get onto next week's show as well.
I don't know how that's possible. Yeah, we'll see if we... Yeah, let me look at... Yeah, that, well, next week, there is no next week's show, it's next month's show. So, Skin of Evil, we're going to be reviewing here shortly. It starts with Kieran again, but it ends with Captain Proton. So, yeah, let's do a quick refresh and see where we're at. And, nope, still ends with Captain Proton, but you never know, before we get to it, it could change. So, all right, but we'll go into Skin of Evil in a little bit. Let's just go ahead and head on into the Neutral Zone. We are back. And we're talking about the Romulans. So pretty much we've got you up to speed on the Neutral Zone. So join us next time for Season 2. Oh, okay, there's a little bit more that happens. Okay, let's do another First Officer's Log, shall we? I try to make these as funny as I can, but sometimes as I read them, I go, oh, that stinks. But you notice I still read them. First Officer's Log. We're sitting here doing nothing while we wait for Captain Picard's shuttle en route to the Enterprise after being summoned to Starbase 718 for an emergency conference. I've been so bored I thought about using the phasers on manual to see if I can hit this ancient capsule floating in our vicinity, but you know, it's going to be destroyed by an asteroid belt anyway, so I'll leave it alone. End of log. So what do you think? The capsule's just floating around. It looks half destroyed. The solar panels, I guess you can call them, have holes in them. But yet the lights are still blinking on the bottom of it.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised that the people were so keen to have this. Riker was so keen to dismiss this, right? You know, I mean, he mentions that had they not been there, they wouldn't have noticed it. But you must have, I assume you would have noticed it because you wouldn't want to, you know, smash into it, and it's there. It's got a breathable atmosphere. I mean, only just, but it is a breathable atmosphere, and it's still got some power running, and it's, you know, at some level it might even have, you know, life signs. Although they do mention that everyone was technically dead, but I'm surprised that it wasn't more on their radar, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's Data who wants to investigate. In a future episode, I believe, Captain Picard says something to the point of spoken like a true Academy graduate on what else Data wants to explore. There's something else, and I don't remember. We'll get to it. But yeah, such an opportunity to investigate this kind of history. So we actually have Data to thank for this one. And I think it's very interesting that, yeah, I would want to explore it as well. They had no idea that there were life signs, or there were no life signs. They were in cryostasis, but I would have wanted to explore everything. Okay, Data and Worf beam over, but they need to be back before Picard's shuttle arrives. You know, I'm curious, why do they send people out on shuttles? Why not just take the entire ship to this emergency conference? Especially since it is an emergency conference.
I mean, that's always true right now. I think it's unclear how fast a shuttle can go, but I think there are some instances of, you know, shuttles not even having warp drives. Now, if you don't have a warp drive, then you can basically go 500 times faster in any kind of spaceship, even a relatively small one. They use this a lot, right? They use it, I believe it's in Samaritan's Snare where Picard goes off in a shuttle, and it's a pre-warp shuttle in order to get his heart fixed. Mm-hmm. And the excuse they use is that they don't want to divert the Enterprise, but really the speed differential between pre-warp and warp is so ludicrous that you should never go anywhere in a shuttle that doesn't have a warp drive capable of like warp 8.
No. And even in Skin of Evil, you know, Deanna Troi was in a shuttle visiting her mom, and then we're just sitting here waiting for her.
No, and also, I mean, so if you've got two people that want to meet up and one person is extremely fast but chooses to stand still, then it's going to take you a while before the other guy comes over, right?
Right.
You would have thought that two people want to meet up, you at least meet in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere in the middle. It won't be exactly the middle, but still. All right. Well, Data believes he can download an old-style disk drive to his tricorder. You know, the problem is, as anyone that works with computers knows, hard disks of our era now would be good for about 5 years, maybe 10 at best. So disk drives on the era of the capsule would be even worse. So I don't think there's any way that that disk drive would continue to work. But, okay, anyway.
But you might be able to watch. You might be able to recover bits of the information, right? I would have thought, because what you start losing, you lose the you lose the integrity of the data to be 100% correct. Mm-hmm. And you might be able to get a bit more out of it, but anyway, I didn't have a huge problem with that.
I don't either. I'm just on a side note.
You know, also when were they supposed to have left? Left around, you know, late 80s or early 90s?
Yep, I've got that. I've got that in a note in a little bit here.
I mean, technically, we didn't have cryogenic stasis either.
We didn't?
No.
Not in 1988? No, I suppose we didn't.
But we don't have it now.
No, yeah, we do it now. It's a, you know. But here's the thing. I did a little math. So, let me find where I have that. Okay, Riker was explaining to the three what happened, and here's the thing I had a hard time believing. Data says that the year, according to the human's calendar, is 2364. Dr. Crusher tells Claire that she was frozen for about 370 years, so that places it around 1994. Now, in 1994, it's interesting. I would say that's about the time that cryonics may have started to take off to what it is today, but since this went out in 1988, that's fascinating that somehow the writers predicted that in 6 years cryonics is going to be taking off. Does that make sense? Or do you think that was just a happenstance?
I mean, I don't know. Actually, I don't know. You've stumped me there.
Yeah. You can't know, but I mean, it's just fascinating.
It is. I mean, to a certain extent, right? A lot of the stuff here is, although it's not, you know, tech that's going to work, and you're not going to be frozen and put into an orbit and, you know, sent to the other side of the galaxy on, you know, to roam in the neutral zone and be picked up 400 years down the line. But it is backed on, you know, relatively interesting and relatively legitimate science. Right, about right. You know, what you do when people can't be cured now. Well, if they do die, then maybe freeze them and then bring them back to life when medicine has progressed far enough.
Yeah. You know, but it's interesting because I don't remember ever hearing anything about capsules being sent into deep space that had cryogenically frozen people on board. Now, LQ Sonny Clemens says the wacko that sold him this scam said that by putting it into orbit, it would reduce the chances of a brownout. Does that make sense? What does he mean by a brownout? Just a power going out?
Yeah, power outage.
Well, I guess if they're in space, it's so cold anyway that they'd still stay frozen.
I mean, I would be probably more worried about something like a solar flare knocking out the electrics, or someone happened to knock you and then you'd decay into an orbit and be burnt up in the atmosphere.
Oh yeah, and you'd be conscious for the few seconds.
you think so? You think you'll be frozen, and then as you decay into the atmosphere, you kind of get brought back to life just to be burnt up.
Just a flash of it. Yes, just a flash. Enough for your cognitive thoughts to go, what the hell? Okay. So, what we really get are three humans floating around since, like I said, about 1994, and Data wants to bring them aboard the ship. Which Riker says, yeah, okay, just whatever you're going to do, do it now. And I mention that because Data does kind of get a tongue lashing later. You know, I am never critical of any of my officers being curious, but this is not a good idea at this time. And, Data doesn't say, well, you could blame your number one. He's the one that told me I could do it.
No, I think that's true. I think that's true. And actually, I do quite, I think it is a little interesting the... Picard doesn't find out about this until he's in sickbay with Crusher, and basically the lines are more or less along the lines of Crusher saying, "Hey, we've got some frozen people here," and Captain's like, "What?" So I've unfrozen them, and I've healed them. You did what?
What?
And pretty much we can hyperspray them on if you like. Where did this come from?
Where did all this come from? Yes, exactly. Yeah. But I did miss something before we went that far. That's when Picard comes on the bridge and sets a new course to the neutral zone. They have a destroyed Federation outpost. And like we mentioned last week, Colin has an interesting observation about that, that supposedly it was the Borg who scooped up these colonies. And all these years, I thought it was just a hint of the crystalline entity. So that is fascinating to learn last week.
Now I have heard that. I have heard that before, and I don't know whether or not. I mean, I don't know whether or not it's when people say it's the Borg. I think it's more that this particular thread became the Borg rather than anyone had an idea that it was going to be the Borg at the time. But do they come across a planet in Q-Who that has been attacked in the way described, or am I just have a fake memory there? Because I thought that in Q-Who there's a specific line where they say that it's similar to the outposts, the Romulan Federation outposts.
As you mentioned that, I am actually, while we're talking, you're going to hear some clicking, guys, because I'm actually going to be pulling up Q-Who. It's episode 16 of season 2. And I'm actually going to put the video on. I'm going to keep the audio down. But I am going to take a look at this and get an idea, because I believe you are right. They said this is very eerily kind of like what we saw on in the neutral zone. So, yeah, we'll go on.
Yeah, now, also, I didn't think that people didn't have the entirety of the Borg set out, and they didn't have the entirety of what the Borg later became planned from day one. But I think that it is correct probably to say that they wanted to have a threat or a new threat come in, and I think this allowed them to in this episode they hint of a new threat, although for most of the episode you're led to believe that it's the Romulans that are the new threat. And they leave this this door ajar. Now, to what extent did the writer of this episode then was either told to put this in or put this in themselves and then someone else picked it up, I don't know. But there are certainly things that get, I think it's not fair to say that this particular thread goes nowhere. It is later referred to or, And I think it can certainly be interpreted as being perhaps the first instances of the Borg probing the Federation or probing the Romulan Empire.
Hmm. Okay, yeah. All right, well, anyway, so we already discussed how Picard was blindsided by people. What capsule people? What people? You did what? Yeah, that's a good one. And then Riker, he jumps down Data's throat for a little bit. And, okay, so let's wake him up, Captain. Oh, no, first I want security here. Mr. Worf, report to sickbay. So what does he do?
Hmm? Yeah, but that's gonna end well when you've got the humans from the 20th century run into a wake up, and the first thing they see is a Klingon. Actually, also, did you notice the heavy-handed, social lesson to camera that Crusher does, where she basically reels off, you know, this is you know, cryonics, this, you know, people in the 20th century were terrified of dying, and, you know, they decided to freeze themselves, and aren't we now so much more evolved? And I think that there's a slight heavy-handed kind of message to camera that that falls on Crusher this week to deliver.
Right. Okay, so I'm listening now. The sixth planet of the system has a series of roads, which indicates a highly industrialized civilization. But where they're sitting, there's only great rips in the surface. As Force just scooped all the machine elements off the planet. And there we go. And that's identical to what happened to the outpost along the neutral zone. So yes, obviously Colin has a very valid point. If this is exactly what happened in the outpost along the neutral zone, then that's probably where what they were planning to do but didn't do in this episode here. So this is fascinating. Okay, let's come back to this episode, though. Now, we get these three. Oh, yeah. And so, Dr. Crusher hits the female with a little wake-up juice, and she looks up and smiles and see Worf's and faints. Wonderful. But let's talk about them. We have Claire Raymond, age 35, homemaker, which they believe is some kind of construction work.
That's it. I didn't mind that joke. I didn't mind that joke at all.
Right. It's funny.
I have been known to have a go at, like, Data being written, you know, too innocently and too, not having information that he clearly would have. And I suspect he knows what a homemaker is, but I still giggled when he said she must work in some type of construction.
Perhaps. She died of an embolism, which had to be sudden, otherwise her condition was good. And now that's, I watched this episode today for this show before I had watched this episode a long time ago. I hadn't seen this one in a long time. So we come to today, and she says that Claire Raymond died of an embolism. Now, that is what killed Brian Baker, a brain embolism. And it was sudden, and that's... And I thought, you know, this is ironic that, you know, what, imagine if his family could have done for him what Claire had done, and Brian wakes up in the 24th century, you know.
He wouldn't faint, though, if he came across a Klingon when he woke up.
No. No, because you know what I would have loved to have seen is that since this was in 1994, for Claire, when she woke up and seen these people, she could say something like, this reminds me of that television show, Star Trek. You know? Wouldn't that be hilarious if that was the case? It's not like Spaceballs, where they actually refer to themselves.
Yeah, no, you have a... It sometimes... It is strange, right? Because, you know, now Star Trek has become such a part of culture that almost anyone that would have lived... You know, it's like when Voyager heads back to a 96 Earth, you know, they go to San Francisco. It is completely the case that almost everyone would know what a Vulcan was, mm-hmm. and who the Klingons are. And it's obviously self-referential if you ever like tackle that in any way, but it is interesting nonetheless.
Yes. And of course, the only time we ever had the series or the genre called out to itself was in First Contact, when you hear Zephyrin Cochrane say, and you people are on some kind of Star Trek. What do you think, First Contact was better or worse than Generations?
Oh, no. I can't go on that at the moment.
Okay, anyway. Oh, dear. Second person.
Okay, what I'd say is that it's closer than what most people think.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's much closer than most people think. Yeah. I have a real soft spot for Generations in my heart. I also do like First Contact. It's also very competently put together. It's very, I in particular like they have the bisected storylines where you have the stuff on the ship and then the stuff on the ground, and they actually don't really talk to each other at all. And the fact that it climaxes the way it does is great. But if you spoke to your traditional Star Trek nerd, they'll tell you that Generation sucks and First Contact is great. Mm. And neither of those two things are as true as what I think most people think. But please send your hate mail onto the forums. Maybe we'll do the films at one point once we've finished.
Second person is Ralph Offenhaus, which is Ralph is my father's name, my oldest brother's name, so why did I mispronounce Rolf? Ralph Offenhaus, age 55, financier, who had advanced cardiomyopathy. What's that mean? His heart couldn't see? Isn't myopathy a vision thing?
I don't know. Actually, I'm not that familiar with a lot of the medical terms, so I thought that he was just a... Whenever he said anything about heart, I assumed it was just heart troubles. And my brain then moved on.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a disease of muscle tissue. So, yeah, you could have vision myopathy, which is a disease of the muscle tissue and disease of the heart muscle. Okay, anyway... But I don't think that's what really killed Ralph. I think he really got bitten by some advanced disease called arrogance. You think?
He's certainly the what? He's certainly the character that you don't particularly. He's the. I think villain's too strong a word, but he's the. He's the pain in the backside out of this three.
Right, but he sure came in pretty critical at the end. Okay, then we have L.Q. Sonny Clemons. His occupation has something to do with music. He's the one that suffered marked deterioration of every system of his body, most likely resulting from massive chemical abuse. And I find it ironic that, you know, let's flash forward a little bit. What do you think Sonny is trying to get from Crusher in Sick Bay? I just need something to jumpstart the day and something to shut down the night. I mean, what could she possibly be giving him? Sleeping pills? Quaaludes? In the 24th century, what do you think there is?
I'm not too sure what there is in the 24th century, but it's obviously some type of, uppers and downers, right?
I suppose. I mean, do you think there's Ambien in the 24th century?
I don't know. How would that have evolved? Medicine-wise, I suppose. Because if you roll back like 400 years from today, not 400 years, 300 years from 300 years in the past, and then if you throw us 300 years in the future, really the medicine of today is nothing like what was available 300 years ago. And I would imagine, if anything, progress is going to speed up in the medical, certainly with a lot of the research going on in mathematical biology and whatnot. So I doubt, frankly, I would imagine that technologically speaking, I suspect medicine would be the one that's much further ahead in 300 years than any of the other sciences. So I doubt there's anything that we would even, we would be in the right ballpark at all.
That makes sense.
To project.
Yeah, it could be that the Ambien's replaced with the personal relaxation light. I still would like to know what that is.
Great callback.
Yes, the personal relaxation light. Anyway, so, I think they tried to do a little bit of humor with Ralph and Sonny, the woman was just a little whiny, Clara. She's just way too whiny. But, you know, we have Ralph, you know, get my lawyer on the phone, or maybe you can get me a copy of the Wall Street Journal, or, you know, I have to check on my accounts. Let's get Geneva on the phone. I could buy this ship 100 times over. And then we have Sonny, you know, he just wants to put together a band and get Data aboard. You make a hell of a sidekick. And so I think they tried to be funny with these guys. It's just I found them boring.
Actually, no, I mean, I did as well. I mean, I think that the subplot of the three humans fish out of water, and I don't know if it's even a subplot or if it's the plot, but, you know, the story that involves them, I'm not particularly that keen on. And I think that from what actually would have happened, you would have actually closed down this storyline a lot earlier. Because what they didn't do, they didn't put the counselor on with them straight away. Mm-hmm. And the first thing you would have done is you would have told the counselor and whatever staff she has on board to be looking out for them. Because, mm-hmm. you know, these guys are going through a huge trauma. And it's going to be pretty psychologically notable for you to wake up 300 years in the future. So one way or another, you really should be... know, giving them help of some description.
Right.
The next thing is that you've got this quasi peril that that the stockbroker or the financier drops them into, and that could have been shut down straight away by basically them letting on the fact that, look, you know, what's some of the history of the 21st century, and then you'll show them the complete collapse of civilization and you know, the World War III. And I think he would have then shut up about believing his lawyer is still going to be around or whatever.
Law firm.
I really think they could have shut this thing off very quickly. Instead, they keep them around, and unfortunately they keep them around so that Picard can go down to them and say that, you know, hey, we're more evolved now, we don't have the pursuit of money, we don't have the accumulation of wealth. They have a bit of debate about, well, it's not about wealth, it's about protection, and then he can then say... And he said, well, you know, that power is an illusion, and they have a nice debate about this. But the problem is that this subplot, in my opinion, is not particularly well written, not particularly engaging, and it also, unlike the best kind of additional plots that you have in episodes, it's not interwoven, in my opinion, in the main storyline. So I've mentioned this a couple of times. The best stuff is when you have a plot at the top level and a plot at the lower level, like a, you know, big geopolitical stuff and a personal plot that interact and reflect each other in some way. Whereas this is just two separate plots that they don't need to interact. They don't reflect each other. You don't learn from one to apply to the other. And in my opinion, it's generally wasted.
Except for, you know, at the end when Ralph stumbles his way onto the bridge, he was pretty vital. Although I think, you know, we didn't need Ralph. Picard already figured out what he figured out. Yeah, you're right. I mean, they wake him up, they say, hi, you're in the future, and then they dump him in a room together to sort out their own concerns. And it isn't until he gets on the comm system that should have an executive key, and then she starts to cry, that he finally says, you know, maybe Counselor Troy needs to look in on these three. But she only looks in on the one. So, I mean...
Yeah, that's true.
You know, the other one's Trill trying to call the law firm, and Sonny's trying to put together a party and maybe get a, you know, a low-mileage pit woofy and help him rebuild a memory or something. All right, guys, at this point, I'm going to go ahead and cut off this episode of the Battle Bridge because the combined show came out to over 2 hours. And that pretty much busts the golden rule of podcasting of never go over an hour too much because you just lose your people. So what I'm going to do is we're going to post them both at the same time, but we're going to cut it up to a part one and a part two. So go ahead and make sure you've downloaded part two for episode 26 of season 1 of The Next Generation, The Neutral Zone.